Time now for Asia Pacific, a look at the region's top news stories this week.
Hello and welcome to this edition of Spotlight on Asia. I'm Jan van der Made.
Iran has some influence in Syria. The Iran government has some influence with the Syrian government.
It's quite important for Iran to have and to maintain that image of being an influential and key player in the region.
The Saudi government is probably not supplying any aid to ISIS, but private donors do, and it's very hard to control them.
And today we look at the proxy war that seems to be fought between Saudi Arabia and Iran in several regions. To start with an actuality, yesterday Friday, Iran called for immediate peace talks between Yemen's warring parties as rebels favored by Tehran fight loyalist forces supported by Saudi-led airstrikes. But this seems to be a tip of the iceberg of a larger schism between Sunni Arabia and Shia Iran. So the story goes that many of the conflicts currently in the Middle East have Iran and Saudi Arabia on opposing sides, both trying to get the upper hand. In Yemen, fights intensified over the past weeks, but, says Theodore Karasik, a senior advisor of risk insurance management in Dubai, even if Iran backs the Houthi rebels there, its direct involvement is not clear.
We need to ascertain how far Tehran is supporting the Houthis in terms of weapons, training, money, and so on. But there is no real evidence of Iran actually supporting outright the Houthis.
Fawad Izawi, a political scientist with the University of Tehran, talking about the other big conflict in the Middle East in Syria and Iraq, says that Iran is involved.
Iran has some influence in Syria. The Iran government has some influence with the Syrian government.
Iran, says Sara Bazobandi of Chatham House, is trying to expand its influence in the region and is ready to invest in that.
It's quite important for Iran to have and to maintain that image of being an influential and key player in the region. With the support that Iran provided to the government of President Assad, it's quite clear that Iran has been willing to pay a very high price to maintain that image and to protect President Assad in order to be later on in a position to use perhaps its influence in Syria as a bargaining chip for the future negotiations between Iran and the international community, and of course amongst the other regional players.
Recently, U.S. President Barack Obama admitted that the rise of the Islamic State armed group in Syria and Iraq was a direct result of the American invasion of Iraq. Ahmad Kaduri, a former nuclear scientist under Saddam Hussein, suspects a wider plot.
Americans will keep on stumbling and fumbling in Iraq, and the ultimate goal is that they are serving Israel's interests in the area, dismantling all the Arab states around it that could be potentially threatening to Israel. And they are succeeding.
Be that as it may, Ross Caputi, who served in the U.S. Army in Iraq, but now criticizes Washington as the director of the NGO Justice for Fallujah, is not sure if it was planned like that.
Most of these fighters were part of a nonviolent protest movement that lasted about a year in Fallujah. This nonviolent movement became violent when the Iraqi government arrested a politician who had been sympathetic to the protesters' goals. At that point, after a year of the government attacking protesters and ignoring their demands and not doing anything to welcome the Sunni population into the political process in Iraq, they felt frustrated, they felt attacked, and they turned to violence.
The Islamic State armed group that rose out of the chaos in Iraq and Syria also used American technology for its own propaganda, says Patrick Coburn, author of the book The Rise of the Islamic State.
Initially, the social media, the internet, YouTube were seen as progressive instruments that would produce a movement which was democratic and secular. In fact, it's been quite the reverse. It's been used most effectively by groups like the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant, by Jabhat al-Nusra and other jihadi movements to spread their ideology. It's full of hate propaganda against the Shia and other groups, and it's been used to publicize atrocities by ISIS in order to demoralize their enemies. And all this has been rather effective.
The big question is, does Saudi Arabia support the Islamic State fighters? Not officially, says Joshua Landis, director of the Center for Middle East Studies at the University of Oklahoma.
The Saudi government is probably not supplying any aid to ISIS, but private donors do. And it's very hard to control that, as we know. And Saudi Arabia has not made an effort, concerted effort, to really shut down all private donations that are going to various jihadist groups in Syria and Iraq.
Imam Kaduri, the former nuclear scientist, says the Islamic State also attracts people from all over the world.
They are very adept and they're very sophisticated. They even are now issuing identity cards issued by the Islamic State to the European members of the Daesh to allow them to pass freely through Iraq, Syria, and so forth. This is on top of their issuing their currency, gold currency.
But, says Landis, Saudi support for the group may be crucial.
It's estimated that about 2,000 Saudis have gone to Syria to fight over the last 3 years. And there are many important Saudis that are raising money, that are acting as cheerleaders, imams. There are television channels in Saudi Arabia that have important imams that have been beating the drums of jihad and war. And the Sunni cause more generally in Syria and in Iraq against the Shiites, who are openly called on Saudi TV channels, Arfad, rejectors, pagans, this sort of thing, which denigrates Shiites and calls people to fight against them in both Iraq and Syria.
Caught in the middle of all this is Israel, that sees different sorts of Islamic extremism closing in at its gates, as Eitan Gilboa of Bar Ilan University points out.
Israel is concerned about the potential for Islamic fundamentalists to come closer to its border with Syria and also to its border with Jordan. Jordan is also at risk because ISIS threatens every regime that is not Islamic according to what they expect of an Arab regime. And therefore, the Israeli interest is that ISIS be checked. Compared to ISIS, the Bashar Assad regime and Hezbollah, and even Hezbollah, look moderate. So you have to select between the worse and the less worse.
In the background, Saudi Arabia and its allies, Qatar and also Turkey, are on one side with the United States, while Iran has allies in the Syrian government of Bashar al-Assad and its own formidable army and secret service. In the background, Moscow, that provides Tehran with help in building nuclear plants and provides it with material for its army, like recently the promise of the S-300 surface-to-air missile. The current nuclear talks between Iran and the P5+1 may now be crucial in easing the tensions in the region. Still, says Ruzbek Parsi, Iran specialist with Lund University in Sweden, there is reason for concern, and Tehran is extremely concerned about the Islamic State in spite of recent reports that they are losing terrain.
They are worried because this group has now rapidly expanded and taken over some major population centers. And if they will continue as they claim they will towards Baghdad and other parts of eastern Iraq, then they will basically destabilize and destroy the notion of a centralized state in Iraq, which is something that Iran has been working to rebuild. But I think it will be a huge step for Iran to commit major numbers of troops to this.
And if ever Tehran decides to indeed go into Syria, like Saudi Arabia is going into Yemen and earlier on into Bahrain in order to quell unrest, a new chapter in this centuries-old rivalry between these two major players in the region will be opened, with consequences nobody will be able to calculate. And with that, we end this edition of Spotlight on Asia. From me, Jan van der Made, goodbye.